Avoid rising energy prices and get a smarter home energy solution with B-Solar. Visit B.Solar and GLG Green Life Group, leaders in property services and open space management at glgcorp.com. The First Serve, your home of tennis.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome along to a big edition of The First Serve. We are back every Monday night post. Of course, another big Roland Garros on the red clay. Very nice to have your company tonight on this Monday, the 6th of June. Your calls, as always, Harry, can't hear you, 1-300-736-736. Your text tonight on 0433-98-11-16. All thanks to Tennis Direct, Australia's favourite online tennis store. Fast delivery, great prices, free delivery if you don't mind, on orders over $150. So you can go to their website, shop while you listen tonight, tennisdirect.com.au. You'll get that nice little 10% discount store-wide using the promo code FIRSTSERVE10. He's on cue. Harry is on fire. He's already ringing. I haven't finished the intro, Harry. Hang on a second. On the B-Solar menu tonight, our wrap of Roland Garros. We toast some Aussie success. We'll tap into the performance mindset and we'll open the UTR discussion. And a mailbag that is quite full, let me tell you, of UTR correspondence. 1-300-736-736. Before we get to Harry, let's reflect on a huge fortnight at Roland Garros for Rafael Nadal and Iga Świątek.
And for me, have this trophy next to me again means everything, no? So, yeah, I've been emotional. Victories, without a doubt, unexpected in some way. A great 2 weeks, honestly, no? I played since the beginning, improving every day and finishing playing a good final, no? So, yeah, super happy and can't thank enough everybody for the support since the first day that I got here, no? So, very emotional. The mindset is very clear, no? I'm going to keep working and to try to find a solution and an improvement for what's happening in the foot. I was able to play during these 2 weeks with an extreme conditions, no? I have been playing with an injections on the nerves to sleep the foot. Of course, Roland Garros is Roland Garros. Everybody know how much means to me this tournament, so I wanted to keep trying and to give myself a chance here. We achieved our dreams. Me, Roger, Novak, we achieved things that probably we never expected. You know, it's not about a goal about winning more titles. It's about a goal to give myself a chance to keep doing what I like to do.
Honestly, I try to treat it as any other match, which is pretty hard and kind of not possible because there are always going to be a bigger amount of stress. And I don't know, we have a feeling that the tournament is coming to an end and this is the last match. So it would be nice to just, you know, finish it properly. I guess I'm kind of accepting that a little bit more. And just I try to lean on the strengths and the things that I have better, maybe. And I'm also aware that my opponents are also going to be stressed, so I try to not panic and just be less stressed than they are. In 2020, the main thing that I felt was confusion, because I've never really believed 100% that I can actually win a Grand Slam, and this time it was, you know, pure work. Everything that was going on, I'm also, like, more aware of how it is to win a Grand Slam and what it takes, and how every puzzle has to, you know, come together, and basically every aspect of the game has to work. And with that awareness, I was even more happy and even more proud of myself. In 2020, I just felt that I'm lucky, you know, and this time I felt like I really did the work.
She did the work indeed, Iga Świątek. What a star. 35 wins in a row. She is the clear world number one by some margin, and Rafael Nadal, quite extraordinary to win 14 times at the same event. Rafa, how much longer can he keep going? It is the burning question. 1-300-736-736. Very happy to hear your Roland Garros reflections tonight. We'll start with Harry in Belmore. Great to have you back on the show.
G'day, Brett. Rafael, he was ruthless. Oh, he was so good, but now he's having injections in his legs, isn't he?
Yes, well, they're going to try and find out what is going on with this foot and whether it's going to actually get any better. I mean, he's going to leave no stone unturned, no doubt. I mean, obviously he's had the injections for the in the nerve region of the foot to allow him to play, which is quite extraordinary. 7 matches in 2 weeks. He's talked about trying to numb the foot altogether. So there's a bit going on in that department for Rafa. Wimbledon only 3 weeks away. What does his future look like? I mean, any time Rafael Nadal has played a grueling slam, he always takes a few days just to assess the landscape. And that's what you've got to do at 36 years of age to obviously prolong your longevity in the sport. We want him to go forever, but certainly of the big three, we've probably always thought that he is the one that would finish first. Well, I suppose between he and Novak being of a similar age, obviously, you know, he's becoming active, Roger Federer. We're hoping he's going to come back later this year. For how long, we don't know. Is it going to be one or two tournaments to farewell the tour? We'll have to wait and see. Hey, you got anything else for me?
Yeah, in 1958, we had a bye in Blackwell Cup.
Yep.
And I made my way to Narromburn Hardcourt Championship, the ladies. Jan Lehane, still a junior, had won the Open, and she was in the final of the junior girls. She had to play Leslie Turner.
Yes.
Jan hadn't lost the singles for 2 years, and Leslie beat her quite easily. Then a couple of year later, Jan and Leslie joined Margaret Smith to tour the world with Nell Hopman as their chaperone. They all done very well for a couple of years. Then they got married. Margaret Smith married Barry Court.
Yes.
Jan married some chaps that I'd never heard of. And Leslie married Bill Bowery. She became Michelle Leslie Bowery. Bowery. And they travelled well. Margaret, in her second Wimbledon, was beaten in the first round by a young, brash Billie Jean Moffat, who later married Larry King, and she became Billie Jean King.
Absolutely and, outstanding, H. You have got us off to a flyer. Nostalgia aplenty. You take us down memory lane. Love that. How good is it to see Billie Jean King, of course, at Roland Garros? Saluted on the weekend, helped present the men's champion, of course, Rafael Nadal, yet again. Thank you, Harry. Love taking your call, and always love to have you on the show, no doubt about that. We've got a bit to cover on the show tonight. So, Roland Garros, how do we pick it apart? I think we always knew once Rafa beat Novak in the quarterfinals, he probably couldn't get beaten from there. We'll never know. We will never know what the outcome might have been if Alexander Zverev hadn't rolled over on that right ankle. Two sets not even complete in 3 hours. It was probably the only way the match was actually going to end. It was extraordinary to watch. And Zverev did step up to beat Alcaraz in the quarters. He had to make a statement with the younger generation coming behind that generation who have been trying to challenge the big three. I love where men's tennis sits right now. We've got all the different generations clashing, which is magnificent. So we'll never quite know that result. But once Rafa was through, poor old Casper Ruud had a great tournament. Done a magnificent job to elevate himself inside the top 10. No man has won more matches on clay in the last 3 years than Casper Ruud, 7 of his 8 titles. He idolised Rafael Nadal. He trained at his academy in Mallorca, but he was a bit of a deer in the headlights. He had a moment, certainly in the second set, where he could have grabbed that. Once he was two sets to love down, it was a good night for Casper Ruud. So quite extraordinary, the record. Never been beaten in a final at Roland Garros, 112-3. The win-loss, we could just go on and on and on about the records that will stand the test of time, no doubt about it. I can't think of anything in world sport that matches what Nadal has done at a singular event, being the French Open. So whether he's going to get back at 37 next year to try for number 15... I think we can only look in the window at a small distance at the moment with Rafa and just take it as it comes and just appreciate that he's still going. This is going to spur on Djokovic, no doubt, being too shy. We go to the grass where you look at that men's top 10. Medvedev, not a great grass courter. Zverev out injured. Nadal, we don't know what's going to happen. Tsitsipas, not a great grass courter. Casper Ruud still going to prove himself on the grass. Alcaraz, we feel like he's going to be a great player on any surface. Rublev, Felix Auger-Aliassime, and Berrettini, who didn't play at Roland Garros. So just crystal balling a little bit 3 weeks out, this is a huge opportunity for Novak, isn't it, to pull one back. And if Rafa doesn't play, even if he does, we know how difficult Wimbledon has been to win for Rafa for quite some time. Great to see Marin Cilic back. Up six spots to 17 in the world. Holger Rune emerging. A bit of brashness there still, and the Scandinavian rivalry between he and Casper Ruud that filtered into the locker room. Don't mind a little bit of argy-bargy yet on the tour. And how about Bernabe Zapata Morales, the Spaniard, up 33 spots to 97, had the best week of his life. We love stories like that. And when you look at the ATP rankings today, Roger Federer, 50 in the world. Never thought we'd ever see that, but that's really irrelevant for Roger now. We just want to see him back in certainly some capacity. The women's is really, really fascinating in terms of the rankings. I mean, Iga Swiatek, world number one, 6 titles, 44-3 this year, 35 straight wins. Now a 2-time French Open champion. She's 4,305 points clear of the pack. Now, I may have this incorrect, but I can't remember Ash being that far ahead, even though she placed herself beautifully as world number one and had got some separation from the pack. But when you look at those rankings today, Annette Contivate, world number two. Really? Paola Badosa, Ons Jabeur, Maria Sakkari, Aryna Sabalenka, Karolina Pliskova, Jessica Pegula, Danielle Collins and Garbiñe Muguruza. Are we counting on any of those to actually step up and win Wimbledon in the next 3 weeks? So Iga really could have an unbelievable period of dominance. And when you look at the experienced players that are still on tour, Kerber, Azarenka, Halep, Kvitova, Svitolina, who's had some time out, whether she's going to come back and play Wimbledon, the unknown of Osaka, but we know hasn't performed well on the grass, has talked about not playing Wimbledon. I'm talking about some Grand Slam winners here, Sloane Stephens. You wonder if Sloane's ever going to get back towards the pointy end. Andreescu's just come back from injury again, so needs time to build. And Anastasia Pavlyuchenkova, well, she dropped 62 spots being a finalist, back to 83. Krejcikova dropped from 2 in the world to 14. And we don't think probably is going to be a huge threat to win the title just because of the year that she's had. So right now, Iga Swiatek, who is going to beat her right now? That's the million-dollar question. 1-300-736-736. So plenty to pull apart from Roland Garros. We always like also to mention, apart from the singles, some good stories too. Jean-Julien Rojer, 40 years of age, the Dutchman, teaming up with Marcelo Arrivalo. And I can't even think of a player that's ever come from El Salvador. So that was some history in the making. 12 seeds, won the men's doubles. Garcia and Mladenovic, once upon a time, great doubles combination. They certainly had a falling out of sorts, but they've come back together to win the French over Coco Gauff and Jessica Pegula. The mixed doubles, Ina Shibihara of Japan, Wesley Kulov, they won the second seeds. Of course, beat Johnny Pierce and Dabrowski in the semifinals. We always like to look at the boys' singles and girls' singles. So the 14th seed, Gabrielle Debreu from France, 16-year-old, won the boys. Lucy Havlikova of the Czech Republic, the 17-year-old, won the girls' singles. We know the Czech Republic just keeps producing great young talent. Special shout-out for the young Aussie too, Talia Preston, who got through to the third round. She's jumped up about 137 spots to 675 at just 16 years of age. So we are certainly keeping an eye on her. In wheelchair action, Shingo Kunita of Japan, 27th singles major. Incredible. And Didi de Groot, 6-4, 6-1, won the women's 14th Grand Slam title, chasing still the record of Esther Vergeer, who was an absolute star, who had 21. But Didi has won the calendar slam twice, her 41st straight tour victory on Saturday. And, of course, post Dylan Orcott and all the records he achieved in the quads, Niels Vink is the man now who's going to probably set even bigger records than Dylan. He won the quad singles over fellow Dutchman Sam Schroeder. And they teamed up to win the doubles, of course, against the Aussie Heath Davidson and Silva of Brazil. So there is a snapshot of everything to do with Roland Garros. Before we go to the break, we also want to touch on a really good weekend for the Aussies, to the point where I've had no sleep whatsoever for the last 24 hours. There were Aussies everywhere. I'm going to bring in Jed Setzer, who is part of our team at thefirstserve.com.au. Jed, good evening. You've had probably less sleep than I have.
We're both up pretty into the pretty early hours of this morning, but it was well worth it. What a night it ended up being for the Australians.
Gee, we've got a few minutes here. Let's just give a little snapshot of the Aussies who won. You can give us a little pin pick. Let's start. We'll go ladies first. Talia Gibson. Now, this was the last match to be completed in California this morning. The great part that the ITF and the ATP challenges are doing now, most of them are being streamed. So you're not missing too much of the action, which is great for us so far away. So Talia wins her first title, and she made a bit of a statement.
Yeah, look, a fantastic win for her. She obviously made her first final a few weeks ago, so she's building form. She's rated very highly internally, so this is one of our rising teams on the girls' side, and, you know, hopefully she can put together a really nice season on the ITFs, and who knows, we might see her in the Australian Summer of Tennis.
All right, plus 62 spots to 658. So ranking not quite relevant, but just to give you a picture of where our players are situated. She's only 17, so there's huge upside. Jordan Thompson, first title in 4 years, first on grass. We want to see Tomo climb back up again. He's been as high as 43. He's had a really tough 12 months, had COVID, some tough losses, but a good win against Dennis Kudla, who actually beat Andy Murray in the semis, and it was great to watch a bit of grass court action in Subotom.
Certainly was. This is a massive, massive win for Tomo. I mean, he's had a really rough year. You mentioned he had COVID. He's had some really difficult draws as well, so he hasn't really been able to get any continuity, but this is a serious breakthrough for him. He's probably played his best tennis on grass, even though he hasn't won a title on grass. He obviously made that ATP final in 2019 on grass. We know his Wimbledon run last year. So, Tomo, big win for him.
No doubt. Live, 73 in the rankings. A young man we're a massive fan of, Jason Kubler. He's looking like he's going to crack the top 100. Again, the body's sound. He's won 12 of his last 14. He won, of course, in Little Rock, Arkansas. Now, go onto our socials because the crowd was fantastic. And Jason acknowledged this is what the ATP challenges should look like around the world, because sometimes the players are playing in front of, you know, two cats and a dog, aren't they? But this is what they should be. And he is hitting it beautifully at the moment.
He is, well, amazing Roland Garros campaign. He's in ripping form. And, you know, you have to admire Jason Kubler, because every time he gets up and he gets in form, he gets injured and then he gets struck back down. You know, he obviously was an extremely talented junior, world number one, played an Australian Open main draw as a teenager and then, you know, had these terrible knee injuries, cracked the top 100, got injured at the US Open, and now he's back. So awesome to see.
No doubt. Live, 111 at my last check. Omar Jasika, great to see Omar just ploughing away. He's grinding. He's playing, you know, the 25Ks, the 15Ks, fourth title for the year. He's 39-8 win-loss, Jed, and one in Greece over the weekend.
Yeah, well, look, Omar, we hope to see him back. I mean, this is what he's got to do. He's got to get through these sort of ITF tournaments to get back to the Challenger Tour, and who knows, he might, you know, he might have a real run at it now. So best of luck, Tim. We hope he keeps going.
Climbed to 420. 239 is the highest he got to a few years ago, the lefty. And Jamie Fulis, great story. Her biggest ITF singles title, the 60K. It was a good crowd in at Romania. Go on our socials. Jamie's done a little video for us, whether you're following us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. She's at a career high now, back inside the top 200.
Yeah, well, this is my pick from the weekend because she is, she's so talented. I mean, we remember her run as a 17-year-old. She got that wild card into the Australian Open. She's had her injury troubles, but she's fit now, and she seems to be firing. She's working with a new coach as well, Dejan Petrovic, the Serb. So, and he's coached Djokovic and Ivanovic and Jankovic. So this is a serious week for her, and we hope that she keeps it going.
Well done to Jamie. Rena Rodionova, runner-up at Subotom, the 100K. Mitchell Harper, that's a tough one. 19-21 match tiebreak in Rancho Santa Fe near Palm Springs there in California. Thomas Fancutt, runner-up at the 15K in Vietnam. Well done to Brandon Walker, Matt Romios. I know Mum Irene follows us on socials. They won in Bosnia, doubles title. Andrew Harris won a challenger doubles title in Little Rock. And Gabriella Da Silva-Fick won her third ITF doubles title. So we salute some Aussies who have done a very nice job. Thank you, Jetta. Good work.
Cheers, BP. Appreciate it.
Jed Zetzer just chiming in there, who was up with me all night covering the Aussies. Thanks to AATC, Australasian Academy of Tennis Coaches, providing quality coach education across the globe. Courses delivered by industry leaders and tennis business owners. Learn locally, coach globally, internationally endorsed. Inquire and enrol at aatc.tennis. Next, Anthony Claricke. He's going to be in the studio. The performance mindset. We're going to tap into that next.
Let the sun pay for your electricity with a 6.6 kilowatt solar system from B-Solar. Visit B.Solar and GLG Greenlife Group. Leaders in property services and open space management at glgcorp.com. The First Serve, your home of tennis.
Welcome back to The First Serve. Racing through a Monday night. Roland Garros, you can dissect that anytime. 1300 736 736 or on the Tennis Direct text 0433 98 11 16. One in. I'll acknowledge it. Brett, you do a wonderful job on the First Serve, SEN 1116 with your footy commentary. Thank you. Who would you back in a boxing fight and tennis match between Nick Kyrgios and Bernard Tomic? Okay, I've acknowledged it. I'm not even going to deem it with an answer. We're not going near Kyrgios. We're not going near Tomic. There's just so many more important things that I want to focus on in this show than these two bantering and going back and forth in the media. All right, now I want to welcome in a very special guest because I've got his book right in front of me. Performance psychologist, over 30 years experience, bringing out the best in people, Olympians, professional athletes, elite level teams. We're going to add a tennis angle, of course, into this tonight. And he's just launched his book recently, The Performance Mindset, The 7 Steps to Success in Sport and Life. The author, Anthony Claricke. Great to see you in, Anthony.
Thanks for having me.
There's so many things to pull apart here in a short amount of time that we've got, but I did notice there is a chapter or a couple of pages certainly on Rafael Nadal. I mean, you, like anyone who just follows sport, Anthony, just simply sits back and says what he has done is quite extraordinary. And he does get a mention in your book before I sort of go into telling what your book's all about. But Rafa, doing it again, what's the first thing that sort of springs to mind?
For sure. The first thing is it's a total coincidence because I wrote the book late last year and I looked at his performance at the French Open with 13 slams and I noted in the book that that's probably one of the single, and you mentioned it earlier, one of the single best sporting performances by an individual in any sport, probably across the globe.
Yep.
And I did a little bit of work into it and had a look at the total percentage of points.
I'd love to know. Let's pick it apart. Yeah.
It's incredible. So with a bit of assistance from the great Darren McMurtry from Tennis Australia, I said to him, listen, This record by Nadal is pretty astonishing. This is even before this year, which we can talk about. And we went back and had a look at pretty much every single point played in every single match for the 13 slam wins. Mm. And it, you know, totals 91 matches. And incredibly, the percentage of points that he wins is under 60.
Yep.
For such a dominant performance across the world, it's about 57.
Mm.
And I think it just speaks to his total resilience. And I put in a quote that he actually, in the book, from Rafa's own book, actually, where he actually notes that the whole sport is in the mind, and he's got a mantra, every single moment counts. And you can really see that these things are deliberate and planned. And I referenced Tony Nadal, his uncle, who coached him for quite a while.
Yep.
And I actually was lucky enough a number of years ago at the Brisbane International to do a talk, Tony and myself. And on that day, of course, everyone was there to listen to Tony, and I got the chance to do that when we were co-presenting. But he went on court afterwards and spoke to the budding coaching audience at the time about how he used to coach Rafa just to hit through every ball, not worry about the point that's gone, not worry about the point that's ahead. And that's what he drilled into him day after day after day as a junior. And Rafa refers to that in his book as well.
Mm.
And you can actually see that he still plays like that. And I think that's what's enabled him to go on and get 14.
And I encourage anyone, when you go to the Australian Open next year, and I've been lucky enough to sort of go around the world and cover some tennis and just sit and watch Nadal train as well.
Yep.
It's fascinating, Anthony. Yep. I don't know, you've probably done it, I imagine, where he just simulates those match conditions. And he's sweating it up as much in the warm-up and practice as he is, you know, going through a 3 or a 5-set match. I mean, his habits are just, to do it over such a long period of time, and resilience is the key word. I mean, you need it, particularly in an individual sport when it's you versus the bloke on the other side.
Totally. What Rafa does really well, and I have seen him training on court and been to a bunch of his matches. When he goes training, He's not training his just his shots. He's actually training his focus. He's training his capacity to zero in.
Yep.
He's training his capacity to stay in the present, forget that last point. And he even talks about if he not to get caught up in the thought of winning. So he says if the thought of winning comes into his mind, he crushes it. That's his language. And it's all about staying in the present. You see that in the training court. So when he practices, he's practicing those mental skills too.
Absolutely. So how would you succinctly describe this book that you've written?
Good question. Look, succinctly, it features 17 different athletes from a wide range of sports. There's some tennis players in there, which I was really honoured to speak to. Scott Draper, Nicole Pratt, Storm Sanders is in there a little. Taylor Harris, Sam Mitchell from AFL, which, you know, people in Melbourne love.
Yep.
A whole range of other sports. Bridget Muir, who climbed, you know, the first Australian woman to climb Mount Everest. That's an amazing feat, incredible. And her story is incredible. So I feature a whole range of stories, and there's things in there like motivation, resilience, focus, I mentioned, culture, leadership. So their experiences and how they dealt with their journeys, it's a real great insight that they afforded me, which I can now share with the readers.
No doubt.
And some of my own experiences of working in sport across AFL, a bunch of clubs over 20 years, and in tennis as well, and motorsport, whole range of other things.
So whether you're a sports fan, a tennis fan tuning in to us tonight, you'll get something out of this book. We'll tap into the tennis angle, because you have worked sort of closely with TA over the years. Can you just take us inside the roles that you've played within tennis?
Yeah, well, I think tennis is one of those sports that everyone understands, really. The mental component, we're just talking about Rafa, is a really big aspect. And TA has supported that mental component across the years. I've been fortunate enough to work with some really good operators, coaches and other sports psych mindset professionals in tennis, and had the privilege of travelling around with quite a number of players in the TA role. So yeah, that's been something that I've been had the luxury to do.
I mean, this is an area where more players seem to be really tapping into, yep. Anthony. I mean, I'll probably look at Iga Świątek as a great example. Her rise in the last 3 years now to win 2 French Opens, dominant world number one. Tremendous girl to sit and listen to. There's a lot going on up there. She's busy, off the tennis court as she is on the court, just the pace of life that she leads. But not only has she got, obviously, a coaching team, strength and conditioning, but she really tapped into that sports psych area. And she's not the only one to do that, but she's one that's been pretty open about how that sports psych has just helped shape her. And we heard the little grab coming on at the start of the show from her press conference about, you know, trying to be the one that's not as stressed as the other opponent or whoever she's going up against. I mean, she's a great example of someone that's tapped into above the shoulders.
Fantastic example, actually. And that interview was fascinating. I agree with you. She's also, what another thing I took from the interview was how she's focused on really learning from experiences that she's already had. And that's something that she's used to minimize her stress so that she can translate into the competition arena what she actually does at training, which is a challenge for a lot of tennis players, to be honest.
So do you think it's when you talk about performance mindset and you're dealing with, you've dealt with individuals over the years and you've dealt with teams, does one need it more than the other? You know where I'm sort of coming from?
I do, yeah. There's an overlap, because obviously every individual within a team uses their own mindset strategies, and they also have to think about how they operate within a team framework. So there's another complexity. I wouldn't say one's more or less important. They're very, very different. In an individual sport, if you lose, it's all on you.
Yep.
In a team sport, if you lose or if you don't perform well, the team could still win. You can sort of think I've done okay, but you still need to tap into the team psychology as well as your individual. That brings in a lot of complexities, how you get on with people, how you collaborate with others that you might be competing for a spot for in a team. They're big factors in the psychology of a team sport. In an individual sport, as I said, though, the spotlight is all on you.
It is. There's no hiding.
No hiding.
Particularly on a tennis court. So we've set the scene. What we'll do is get a little break in, because I want to come back and sort of pull apart some of the people you've spoken to in tennis. You've also researched junior Grand Slam finalists. I want to tap into some of those numbers. Anthony Clarica is here. Get a copy of his book, The Performance Mindset, The 7 Steps to Success in Sport and Life. All thanks to Hume Tennis and Community Centre. It's a mini Melbourne park in Melbourne's north. It's got tennis for everyone, perfect also for coaches and players. If you're coming from interstate to train and compete, it's very close to Melbourne Airport accommodation just around the corner. Find out more at humetennis.com.au. More of Anthony Clarica on the First Serve to come next.
Fight back against rising energy prices with a 6.6 kilowatt solar system from B Solar. Visit b.solar and GLG Green Life Group. leaders in property services and open space management at glgcorp.com. The First Serve, your home of tennis.
Wonderful to have your company on a Monday night. Brett Phillips in the chair. We're talking the world of tennis post at Roland Garros, and now the build-up to Wimbledon only 3 weeks away. Anthony Clarica is in the studio. The performance mindset, the seven steps of success in sport and life, and just tapping into from a tennis angle tonight. So a few things, Anthony. You talked about certainly some of the people you've spoken to in tennis. And I know that Storm Sanders, who's obviously out on tour, Nicole Pratt, highly esteemed coach, former player, Scotty Draper, who's gone into the sort of admin area of TA, former player, of course. Just tell us some of the discussions you had with that trio, who have all walked sort of some different generations of tennis in this country.
Yeah, well, some of the insights they gave me that we describe in the book. For example, Scotty Draper talks about his win at Queen's. And when he was leading, he talks about how out of the blue, he spoke about nerves that can either come out of the blue or they can build up gradually. And he was leading in the last game of the third set to win. And he all of a sudden got quite nervous, and thankfully he sat down. And what he did was he thought of something on the spot and reversed the score. Instead of being 5-3 up, he thought, I'm 3-5 down. He always played like an underdog. And he took that approach, for example, when he also beat Muster, who was the number one, you know, the king of clay, as Muster was known years ago. And he said he made that match, when he beat Muster as a highly credentialed player, he said he forgot about the score in that match and he took it purely as a battle of wills. And he didn't worry about winning the score or the points. He worried about willpower and beating Muster in that, because he took pride in that. And he took that approach into Queens. And when he reversed the score and became the underdog again, he actually won that tournament.
Nice.
And Nicole Pratt talks about a range of things, including her challenges on the tour and how you don't get into flow that often. She says she could, over a 20-year career, could count on one hand how many times she actually got in the flow. It's mostly about working hard to stay switched on. And that's what a lot of people don't realise. You've got to be constantly on top of your game. And even the challenges of being on the tour, you know, it is a grind living out of a suitcase and hotels. And her one and only win on the tour in India, she went back to her room at night and she actually cried.
Yeah.
And she says that the reason that happened was because she realised that tennis really can be lonely, and it's a sport where you should celebrate. And that taught her a lot of lessons that day.
I think that's a great point, you know, because we just talked at the start of the show about, you know, some of our Aussies, well, a 17-year-old winning her first tournament, and then we get players who don't win their first tournament until they're in their 30s, who have been grinding maybe for 10, 15 years, and what the definition of success is in an individual sport like tennis. And I always find this quite challenging, Anthony, to pull apart when we've got to analyse our Australian contingent. Mm-hmm. Are they performing at a good level? Could they be performing better? And the hardest bit when you sit here is that you're not inside their life out on tour. Are they doing everything to get the best out of themselves? And that's something that's really hard to answer from my point of view, because we just look at a match, we look at pure talent, but as we know, pure talent, and there's many examples of that, only takes you to there. Unless you've got the work ethic and all the other bits to match that pure talent, you're probably not going to get the best out of yourself.
Well, the whole theme about the book is that mindset underlies work ethic, and that becomes more important than talent. So it's mindset first, in my opinion, then work rate, then talent. And there's so many variables on the tennis tour, and you could go for years without winning a tournament, and it's incredible. You have to genuinely be resilient, be able to absorb the losses and the knocks. Living out of a suitcase week after week, you lose first round, you don't know where you're going, your schedule depends if you win.
Yep.
If you win three matches in a row, you stay at the hotel, you're only breaking even. Some players only start breaking even with their expenses inside the top 120.
Mm.
So if you're up 180 in the world, it sounds brilliant. And in all honesty, it is amazing. You know, it's very few people that can get there, but it's still tough.
Yeah, dollars-wise, it doesn't necessarily translate, as you're right, until you get closer to that top 100. Storm, quick one on Stormy, is the current player.
Yeah, Storm, yeah, brilliant, making a transition back after years of injury. Her perseverance, I think, is one of the things that comes through in the book. And you've mentioned a few injuries of players that you've already discussed today on the show. Yeah, dealing with injuries is a real tough battle. And I think moving back into doubles and transitioning back there and finding her way on the tour in singles a little bit more is something that she'll work towards. But she talks about routines and the importance of well-being. You do need to look after yourself on the tour, because if you can't sustain your well-being, it will get you.
No doubt. Now, one thing we were talking about before we came on air was some of the research that you've done into junior Grand Slam finalist. It's over, what, about a decade period, and how that's translated into a career best ranking. I know you've got some numbers that would be sort of interesting for the people to hear.
Fascinating. Look, I looked into this data, obviously, knowing a little bit about the tour and seeing some players and how challenging it can be, and we need to be more understanding of that. It's not just tennis, but transition in any sport from junior to open level is one of the big demands and challenges. We talk about all the reasons why transition is so difficult. So I thought, let's go back and have a look at every junior Grand Slam finalist, not just a winner, but the winner and the runner-up over a 10-year period from 2001 to 2010. And I looked at all the four slams, boys and girls. And fascinatingly, the average best career ranking on the Open Tour from junior slam finalists in the boys was not even in the top 100.
Right.
It's 125.
Okay.
It just goes to show, I think, how challenging it can be to move from a junior. And let's remember in tennis, juniors are up to 20 years of age. And I understand not all players play juniors, but there's some very, very good players ranked who ranked number one eventually that won junior slam. So they sway the data, you know, towards the lower end. So that just gives you an indication of how many players struggled to really make big roads on the Open Tour as they transitioned from that junior sphere.
Just a couple of names, just out of curiosity.
Couple of names. Who do you want? Well, Monfils was six, so he obviously went on. Cilic was three.
Yep.
They both won the French Open in 04 and 05 respectively. But then you get a guy, Daniel Berta, won the French Open in 09, career best ranking 637.
Yeah.
You know, it's tough. We all remember the names that go well, but you don't remember or ever hear the names that struggle along the way.
Now, the sort of the reverse of that, because I look at the junior rankings a lot, and it's easy for people to throw out there, well, Australia has got that many, you know, good juniors coming through at the moment, all highly ranked. Now, you don't need to be the best junior necessarily to have a great pro career, do you? I mean, the stats the other way will say that it's sort of irrelevant. You're developing, you're trying to build a game that can play on the pro tour and have some longevity. But if you don't get maybe even inside the top 50, top 100, it's not the end of the world.
No, it's not the end of the world. But you certainly need to focus on building that mindset. And you need to make sure that you've got the commitment to work through that transition phase. Because as you spoke about earlier, you can go through a lot of time of losing consecutive matches and you're travelling and you ask yourself whether it's worth it or not. And as I said before, this is not just tennis.
Mm.
You know, you could look at the Australian cricket team, the men's or women's soccer team. It happens in AFL, AFLW. It's all sports. That transition is a really challenging time. And I really like to advocate for clubs, coaches and the junior athletes themselves to focus on their mindset development to assist them through that transition phase. It's a big deal.
No doubt. Thank you for coming in. There's so much more we could probably speak about, but that's a little teaser for the book. Now, where can we go and grab a copy, The Performance Mindset?
All good bookshops and online. Thanks very much.
Beautifully done. So what we've actually got a couple you're going to leave with us.
Yes.
Which we'll give away if you want to give us a call between now and 9 o'clock, 1-300-736-736. But we'll also have a couple for our all our crew on social media who follow us all over the world who would probably love a copy of this book. So The Performance Mindset, Learn the Lessons of Elite Athletes to Reach Your Full Potential. Now that I've got some downtime, I'm going to go and have a good read. Really appreciate you coming in.
Enjoy. Thanks for having me.
Anthony Clarico, a great book in front of me, The Performance Mindset. All thanks to Melbourne's leading synthetic grass court surface and construction specialist, Asti Tennis Courts, trusted by Melbourne tennis clubs and councils. Check out aste.com.au. We'll come back and wrap up with a few bits and pieces.
Install a 6.6 kilowatt solar system plus battery from just $25 a week at B-Solar. Visit B.Solar and GLG Green Life Group, leaders in property services and open space management at glgcorp.com. The First Serve, your home of tennis.
Welcome back to The First Serve. A bit to get through in the next 5 minutes. Yarra Tennis Coaching, Eaglemont Tennis Club. Go and see Shane Scrutton and the crew. He'll look after you. 30 years coaching experience. His mission is to improve your game, whether you're a complete beginner or a serious player. Check out yarratennis.com.au. Ruben in Ascot Vale has given us a call. No, Ruben is gone. He was there and now he's disappeared. BP, Matthew Dellavedova. Where's he at? The tennis player, yes, not the basketballer. Watched him play Omar Jasiko in Greece last week. I think it was a quarter. Was it a quarter final? I think it was. Went down. He's 848 in the world. He's 22. It's a long climb. He's doing some hard yards. So he's just got to keep grinding away. It's as simple as that. There's no shortcut. Speaking of grinding, Richard Glover is head of the ATP Challenger Tour. Our podcast, The Grind with Alex Johnston, will have another edition coming up this week. And on the back of Jason Kubler's comments about the Challengers getting a bit more notoriety, Richard Glover with some interesting thoughts.
If you could just explain the way you're sort of trying to ease the burden on players and increase revenue, which then would turn into prize money, I guess.
Yeah, I almost think we need to almost take a step back and really just maybe just explain what we've actually been doing over the last 4 or 5 months. And really what we've done is a really deep dive into the Challenger Tour. So we've created different work streams, looking at different aspects of the Challenger Tour. We've been consulting and speaking with tournaments and tournament promoters. We've also created a player group, so representatives of Challenger Tour players, and that we've engaged. We engage with the monthly basis and really looking at all aspects of the Challenger Tour. And I think for me, the starting point, the question that we've really wanted to answer is what is the purpose of the Challenger Tour? And obviously people say, well, it's the pathway for men's professional tennis, but what does that actually mean? And I think we sort of distilled that pathway purpose into three key aspects. One is we're looking moving forward, and moving forward, we're talking about from the sort of the start of the 2023 season onwards, is we're looking to create financial sustainability for a specific target ranking range of players. So what that target ranking range is it still being worked on at the moment? So that's the first aspect. The second aspect is we want to increase playing opportunities at Challenger Tour level for a larger target ranking range of players. And then the third aspect is really about creating greater mobility for younger players. And so now that we've sort of established the purpose and the sort of the three foundations of that purpose, is we're really working on a new strategy that looks to start to deliver on that purpose: financial sustainability, increased playing opportunities, and greater mobility. And I don't necessarily think it's going to be one thing or two things that starts to solve the financial sustainability issue. I think it's going to be a combination of things. So we are looking at prize money at events and changing prize money at events. We are looking at the distribution of prize money at different categories. We're looking at increasing the number of higher levels, so 100 and 125 category challenger events. We're also looking at some more player support mechanisms as well, in terms of what other ways can we actually financially support players.
So that's Richard Glover, head of the ATP Challenger Tour. That full podcast, The Grind with Alex Johnston, coming up this week. Jed Zetzer has also caught up with Nathan Healy, who's just finished coaching Max Purcell. Lachlan Buell is going to join me in the studio next week. He's in Melbourne, Play USA, catching up with young Jasmine Starr, who's going down the college pathway. She's graduated over in the US. Part two of Brad Stein. This is a great chat with Rowan Williams. So go back through our First Serve library. You can catch that at thefirstserve.com.au. Subscribe to The First Serve through your preferred podcast platform to catch all our podcasts. Plenty of listening right throughout the week. The mailbag, haven't got much time for the mailbag tonight. Brett, love your show. Told you Rafa would win the French, number 22 on the way. This was after he beat Novak. Nostradamus here. Rodney, thank you very much. Bring on Wimbledon. As for Novak, like in 2017, change coach, he's gone. Won't win another tournament, according to Rodney. Novak done. Geez, he'll be champing at the bit to get to the grass right now. There's a bit on UTR. I might just have to hold that over to next week. Obviously, we've done a lot in the UTR space over the last few months. Some great correspondents coming in, very passionate people out there. I'm also liaising with TA about some of this correspondence. So how about I pick that up next week when we've got a little bit more time. All thanks to our good friends at Yonex, 76 years performance product crafted in Japan. Check out their latest range at yonex.com. We're on at 6:30 after the footy. Catch us then next Monday night.